Here, the old gods are dead.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, you guys. What's up? It's me, Jojo Siwa, and welcome back to the Creepery Podcast.
Imagine I just went, hi, Jojo, and then we just pretended the whole episode like that.
I'm Jojo Siwa, and you're Jojo, as in, like, leave, get up. You're kind of serving.
Thank you.
We should always record on a Saturday. We both kind of slay. I think the, like, lack of stress. Oh, my God. I woke up at 7 a.m. today instead of 5, and I feel like I'm on crack. Happy Saturday, listeners, even though it's not going to be Saturday when you listen.
Hope you're having a shite I know you're having a shite Wednesday when you listen to this. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day. Happy commute. Hope you enjoy your commute home from work, where there's probably going to be traffic and you're going to be stuck.
Liam commutes, has anybody ever heard?
You mean you commute as well, kind of. You drive.
Aye, but like I start at a specific time and leave at a specific time, so I never encounter any traffic.
That's true.
Lest I be stuck behind a tractor when I go through the fields of Fife back to my house.
That's an image. I can imagine you are a very angry driver. I don't think I've ever been driven anywhere by you.
I'm not. Sometimes, like when I'm on my own, I don't actually get vocally like road rage or anything like that, but see if there are other people in my car and somebody does something dangerous on the road, because not only is my life in peril but other people's, I do get like a bit angry.
How do you feel about cyclists?
See, this is the thing, when I drive home from my work, like there's a purpose-built cycle path on like this really, it's like a nice country road kind of thing. And none of the cyclists ever use it. They just cycle on the road, and it's quite a tight road for cars, so I'm like, in that instance, yes, I hate cyclists. Sorry to any cyclists.
Silly geese.
Anyway, what mundane chat, commutes and cyclists. The only update that I have is that I went to see Scream 6, and it is the best film I've ever seen since Megan.
It's been a couple of weeks.
No, genuinely, like, as we've spoken about before, I like to have a full cinematic experience. When I go to the cinema, and like Scream's my favorite franchise of films, and me and my girlfriend were like up the back like, oh my god, and like grabbing on each other and shit. It was class. Anyway, what have you been up to?
Redefining the English language,
as a Scotsman often does.
No, because like, you know how people like say like bollock when something is annoying? Yeah, well, I was like, people think that's vulgar and they hate when people say it. So recently, I saw a packet of spinach and I was like, oh my god, spinach, like A-C-H at the end, that's kind of like ache. Anyway, I was like, but then bollock has an E. So I was like, what could I make it? So recently when I've been like describing something as a bollock, I've been saying balache. It's such a balache. And then no one can be like mad at me. But then when I explain it, I'm like, you know, boik.
How do you say bully?
Fuck off, Cezanne Marguerite. You're from fucking Montreal.
That is trended on TikTok right now. The most popular girls in school. If you have not been educated, please go onto YouTube and educate yourself.
Literally, it's fundamentally changed me, and also is the catalyst for what got me interested in like really stupid like observational comedy.
Yeah,
like it's.
I think it kind of made me a pro in that.
It's perfect. It's like the perfect series. Cezanne Marguerite is like the perfect character.
Like, is it Brittany the one who always yells? I like her the best.
Yeah.
I like it that she sounds like she smokes.
I like them all. They are all so important. Like, oh my God, I get so emotional thinking about this show. Like, this and Jimmy, the private school girl, like, are two such important pieces of media to me.
You can tell by listening to this podcast that that's the case. Again, we've both got like two really stupid questions to ask each other. Normally it would just be one, but mine's a quick fire one. And what I want you to do is open up Safari and pick your most embarrassing tab that's open and tell me what it is. I've got like 40 million tabs open. One of them is Katie Melua 2003 high-res stock photography.
One of mine is just entitled Virginia Woolf Death. Because I wanted to, like, I was telling a story and I was like, is that true? I think that's true. But I was like, surely not Virginia Woolf and Sylvia Plath. And I was like, oh, well. complex women, I guess.
Yeah.
And then, oh, I have like an embarrassing one. It's just synth eBay. Like, synth eBay.
What time were you up till when you opened that tab?
Oh, that was a commute home's open tab, and I woke up and it was still open. I was like, I wonder if the train conductor walked past me, saw that I was looking up synthesizers on eBay, and was like, figures.
I've got another tab open being like, when does Outlander end?
Please God.
And then was disappointed when I reopened this tab to see that there's a prequel.
What?
Yeah.
How is that possible?
They're making more. Who the fuck is watching this?
How is it possible that there's a prequel? I don't get how that is logistically possible based on the plot of the show. It's about time travel. How can you prequel time travel?
I think it's a bit like a character that's in the books, their young life. Like, who the fuck cares? Bore.
Yeah. I also have just the Wikipedia article for Listerine relevant to this episode, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right, what's your stupid question?
What was my stupid question? Oh, if you could get like a stupid tattoo, what would you get?
Are we picking like one normal, one stupid?
Yeah, one good one, one silly one.
I have many stupid tattoo ideas, but I will fulfill them. Like, I do not care. I look at any of my tattoos. Probably the most stupid one, although it's sentimental to me, is baby Snoopy getting added to my sleeve. My sleeve that I have is like quite. It's got Laura Palmer on it. It's got a couple of tarot.
That one is so
things.
Fun. I love that one. It's so good. Who did it?
An apprentice actually called Mark for Dunfermline. I'm gonna get him today another one on me. I want, and then for my serious one, so baby Snoopy, silly, or a wee pint of Guinness. And then for my serious one, I've got a space like on the back of my sleeve, and I'm think it's like the perfect size to get our Lewis Chessman.
Oh.
So I'm gonna get that.
That's baby.
What's your stupid one?
Okay, so my stupid one is a tramp stamp on my lower back that says ball games.
please get that.
That's really funny. I won't get it, but like, I just wish I would.
I wish you would.
I know, but like, my body's changing. I'm getting older, and I want to make sure that I'm like done before I get
it. That's not something I'm going to apologize for.
I'm not going to apologize for that. Yeah. So my body's changing, so I'm not getting that yet. But then again, I feel like that's a good area because it's like, how saggy can it get, you know?
I think that place kind of stays perfect. I think that's what's so great about tramp stamps.
My serious one, I always wanted like I love the song Venice Bitch by Lana Del Rey. And I always wanted like Fear Fun, Fear Love, one on each album.
Love. Because
that's so faggy.
Yeah.
That's gay with a capital.
Venice Bitch is probably my favourite Lana Del Rey song. It's like Venice Bitch, then Ride.
Mine is like Norman fucking Rockwell, then Venice Bitch, then Ride. And people are like, that's so basic. Why are you not picking like her unreleased Lizzie Grant stuff? And I'm like, the hits are the hits, you know? It's a hit for a reason.
When folk are like, oh, you only like their popular music. And it's like, well, Dreams is Fleetwood Mac's best song. And so is Everywhere.
It is a hit. And that is why it's their best song. Yeah. Sometimes people will say like their favorite song by an artist. And I'm like, you're such a fucking liar, Camille. Like, what? Oh my God, it's so embarrassing. It makes me cringe every time. And it's always when people are drunk at a party. And I'm like, shut up. Shut up. I'm such a like judgmental cunt. Oh my God. Anyway, another tattoo I want is like the entirety of the Ride monologue, like down my side. Because I think that's art.
That'll go down to your ankle. You might as well start it on your cheek, run down your neck and your side, and then go to your feet.
It's like that guy that has all of the like track listings for Taylor Swift on his back and now he's running out of space. You know this, right?
No, I'm shocked. That's like a serial killer thing today. Have you ever seen this? It's
the guy with Miley Cyrus tattoos as well.
Oh my God, I wouldn't... Again, I've got like Laura Palmer tattooed on my arm, but like I would never, ever, ever get like a high-res like image of like a celebrity.
My dad. Have I shown you my dad's Henrik Larsson tattoo?
Your dad's Henrik Larsson tattoo. Who does it look like? Because it doesn't look like Henrik Larsson.
Well, it does. It does. It's just when he doesn't shave his arm, it gets obscured a bit. But when he's been in America, people are like, is that Barack Obama?
Speaking of embarrassing things, no, your dad's Henrik Larsson tattoo. Of course, that's not embarrassing. Like last episode it was revealed that I mispronounced Squidward as Squigward. Mm-hmm. And I put on her Instagram story, I was like, say something more embarrassing than this, like make me feel better. And people submitted their they did make me feel better, and we are gonna read them out. I don't think we told anybody that we're actually reading them out, but free use, you sent them in. We'll not name you, at least.
It's really funny, and I really appreciate them all.
Right, so starting off with what I think is the least embarrassing is that a listener sent in that they said, the Madonna song Time Goes By, I misheard as Time Ghosts Bite, which... Fair, I think that's a very fair misheard lyric. And then one of my pals wrote in, we're levelling up a bit here, pissed myself on the bus to Olin Towers when I was 13. I know that, I didn't ask him, but I can, that was on a school trip. I have a feeling that that must have been on a school trip to Olin Towers.
This one is really funny because I feel like my mum has told a very similar story to this because she's from Oban. But the person said, I grew up on the West Coast and thought clouds were blue and the sky was grey until I was about 8 or 9. And that one is funny, but also kind of sad because I can imagine thinking that being from like this region of the world. So someone said, so they like grew up in the US, I believe, is the context of this story. And they said, not embarrassing, with their whole chest set, started this off, not embarrassing. But I thought I invented gay marriage as a kid. And then they said, ally behavior. And I was like, that is embarrassing. Don't sell yourself short. That's really funny and really embarrassing.
I thought I invented gay marriage. Like, in their head or as, like, the actual concept?
I don't know. Because I was like, because they're talking about they're in the US. And I was like, did they think they, like, got the bill passed? Like, personally, like they manifested it.
Please give us more detail. So the last thing that we have is a funny story that somebody emailed in to us. So this person wrote in saying, I just heard a great story from my mate this evening at the pub. my friend works as a warden at Holyrood Palace and was on a shift in the main gallery this week and heard some commentary from a visitor. The visitor was walking through the portrait gallery and naming each Stuart monarch. So he's like walking past him and he's pointing, he's like, Charles the First, Charles the Second, and then he gets to James the Sixth and he just goes, gay. And just moves on.
I want to know what date this was, because it feels like
Which listener went to the Holyrood Palace?
Mary Queen of Scots on twitter.com. This was you.
They go on to say, my friend had to hold in their laughter and remain professional, but was very much in agreement. Thought you would all enjoy this. I enjoyed that. Good to see your influence out there in the world, even if it wasn't us, but I have a hard time believing it.
Yeah. That is like my words coming out of someone else's mouth.
Our like, influence.
It could easily have been one of us.
No way to segue this. This episode's going to be a bit body snatching, but no, your typical Birkin hair. We have Liam to thank for a creative episode idea. So we'll take a wee break. We'll talk about body snatchers.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So like any good body snatching story, we have to put the pressure on medical advancement for thanking them for the reason behind it. Scotland was not a particularly easy place for surgeons to learn back in ye olden times. Not that olden times, like a couple hundred years ago. Although Scots are like justifiably proud of their countrymen's achievements in the medical field, or those that are attributed to Scottish people. I actually watched a really interesting TikTok the other day on a girl like talking about how Western people, specifically like white Western people, love to like be proud of the achievements of their ancestors and pull out the, well, you wouldn't have this if it weren't for us. But then they also like to do the whole, you can't blame me for the sins of my ancestors. Like, that wasn't me. Things have changed.
Yeah.
So it's very, I can't remember the user's name, but it was really well articulated, much more thought provoking than I'm doing it justice right now. But I always think about this when we do episodes like this and we're like, the person who invented this. And I'm like, the person who gets credit, definitely. Yeah. But like, they definitely had a hand in it.
It's one of the things, especially, I think we've spoken about this before, like Scottish people, obviously Scottish people invented loads of stuff.
Including capitalism.
And folk love to brag about that. But like one that we often brag about is like, oh, we invented the telephone. And Alexander Graham Bell was, he believed in eugenics.
and it's not the slay you think it is, sister.
Aye, like, and I think like his big beef was with deaf people, which is crazy to think about.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's,
I mean,
insane.
And then, I mean, probably white supremacy amongst other things, but it's just something to put into perspective when you're talking about, like, bragging about Scottish people invented this, Scottish people invented that. It's often, there's layers to it.
Nonetheless, especially in Edinburgh, there's a huge, like, culture of, like, contribution to medicine. Like, it is a hub of, like, medical advancement, and it has been for a long time. Glasgow as well. So many famous doctors from here attributed to inventing things, although they can't always, like, go the full way, and there's all often scientists behind their back as well that aren't credited too.
But
back to my earlier point about how I was googling Listerine mouthwash is named after, I think, a Scottish doctor whose surname is Lister or something.
That's such a good fact.
Named after Joseph Lister, who pioneered antiseptic surgery at the Glasgow Royal Infirmary in Scotland.
Love. That's such a good fact.
I learned that. So when I was doing my undergrad, I had we had an icebreaker with all the supervisors during our project, where it was just everyone getting drunk and doing like a little quiz over Zoom, as you did back in the day, a couple of years ago. And one of my lecturers whipped out that fact, and I was like, noted, I'll be using this at a later date. Because this was like just after we'd started the podcast, I think.
Yeah.
Or just before. And I was like, this seems relevant to me. Other famous medical advancements by Scottish people are Sir James Young Simpson, who's accredited with the first determined use of chloroform in operating theatres, and of course, Sir Alexander Fleming, who, if you're paying attention in secondary school, discovered penicillin. Although I have a lot to say about this, because he did, but like my favourite bit about it is like, there's a joke about how doctors aren't scared of being in the lab, but they're not necessarily good at it. And he discovered it by accident. Because he was doing like bacterial culturing of, I think it was Staphylococcus aureus.
This is hot, Liam.
And then he had like a growth of a penicillium fungus that shouldn't have been there. If his antiseptic technique had been slightly better, it wouldn't have happened. So sometimes your greatest incompetence can be your sexiest slay. But yeah.
Some people do say though that Alexander Fleming was a bit, like, he was a bit embarrassed and he was a bit shy, so he just made up the story that he discovered it by accident by going to like a colleague being like, look at this, look what happened accidentally, I had no idea this would happen. And then his colleagues were the ones that like went to like gas it up because he was shy. There's two different versions. I heard that on This Podcast Will Kill You.
But yeah, another thing is like, he discovered it, but he doesn't have the chemistry, like, know-how to isolate the active ingredient. So, like, penicillin releases, like, penicillium, which is the antibiotic product. And it was actually an Australian chemist, I believe, in London, who figured out how to mass-produce it and isolate the compound. So it's not, like, entirely Alexander Fleming gets the credit. And it's not like people weren't researching in fields like that already.
Yeah, yeah.
Food for thought. I love when people make mistakes and it turns out fine. Like, it makes me think, like, damn, maybe when I make mistakes, it's not that bad because I might accidentally discover something. So, yeah, to get to the place of having all these medical advancements, there had to be a lot of inhuman sort of, like, testing and stuff, or, like, discovery of, like, anatomy and such, and which was quite a hard thing to do. Back in the day in Scotland, we didn't always have things we have now, and people couldn't like just donate their body to medical science, which is wild to me to this day. Like, it keeps me in a job. it's so baffling to me. But yeah, for centuries the Kirk held back advances in medieval Scotland, because they held the belief that all illnesses were governed by the four humours, which are blood, phlegm, black bile, and
yellow bile.
Yellow bile. Which is so... it's so, like,
whimsical.
Fantastic. Yeah,
I love the Porcuverse.
I've recently, in recent years, become a person who loves to say, like, oh, I have a problem with my black bile. Like, I'm just not feeling good today. But I didn't always be like that, because I would never, like, when you, if you hear black bile, if someone's, like, shitting out black bile, you think, like, oh my god, you have, like, a burst ulcer or something in your stomach, like, you're gonna die.
I'm thinking plague.
Yeah. But then, so when I first started dating my boyfriend, he was sick one time, and I was like, what's going on? Like, what's the symptoms? And he was like, oh, it's just black bile. And he meant as in the four humours, because he has, like, a very dry, like, very horrible sense of humour. But then he saw me starting to panic. I was like, oh my god, go to A&E. Because it sounds like you've, like, burst an ulcer. Like, oh my god, go to A&E. He let me, like, go on like this for, like, half an hour, and then he was like, he just sent me a screenshot of the four humours, and I was like, that's literally not funny.
And then your mum are cut for the same cloth, apparently. No,
I always, yeah... I was thinking this the other day. I was like, you know, the Freudian theory of men end up with their mothers. I was like, that'll never happen to me because, like, gay. And lo and behold, he can't keep being right. Yeah, so back to the point at hand. I love a segue. I love to not talk about what I'm supposed to be talking about, if anyone hasn't noticed. Yeah, so because of these strongly held beliefs from the church, any attempts to further advance medicine was actively discouraged and, like, viewed as sort of sacrilege or, like, a mortal sin, because, like, there's an extent to which you're playing God. There's actually ethical concerns like this still going on right now. So according to the church, you couldn't, like, deface bodies or anything, or, like, take anything out after death, because for judgment day coming, the body had to be whole.
Yeah.
Or you wouldn't see the kingdom of heaven, effectively. So would-be doctors were prevented from studying human anatomy because of these religious beliefs. And obviously, medical advancement was put on kind of a halt because of that. And even in terms of surgical techniques, people were very restricted in what they were actually allowed to do. It took a while for people to even be allowed to, like, for traumatic head injuries, be able to, like, drill in and, like, relieve pressure.
Christ.
Like, so you weren't allowed to, like, the whole, like, doctors, like, archaic do no harm,
yeah,
like, slogan, which is, like, fair enough, like, yeah, but then they had to, like, watch people
suffer
who they had some knowledge to help die in front of them.
It's and, amazing, like, that just... this is happening, like, again, like, where I don't know if I'll keep this in or no, but like the abortion reformations that are, yeah, happening in America, where it's like, oh, we must let this fetus survive even if it's at the sacrifice of the mother.
Yeah, it's literally, like,
archaic.
It frustrates me to no end, because, like, I like to try and empathize with where people are coming from, and to an extent I can see where arguments are coming from, but there's some things that I just, like, I can't even put myself in the situation where I would think like that. Like, I just don't get it fundamentally. Like, it's just completely disagrees with what I
believe. It's because it's getting to the point of nonsense where it's like, if a person who's pregnant has an abortion, we can put them on trial for murder and they can face the death penalty.
Literally, like, I don't see how, like, those two things are, like, it's just wild. It's just wild to me. But yeah, it's very sad, very frustrating. And we are not qualified enough to go into it any deeper than we already have, really. But I think it's very obvious where we stand on the matter.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But I do also, I'm sorry, I do also hate the term, like, pro-abortion. I don't think anyone is, like, pro, like...
Yeah.
The ideology of, like, abortion.
I think that's a thing made up by right-wing people, though, because...
Literally. It's just,
we're pro-choice.
Although it's a lot, like, it's like a lot of things where it's like, you are pro-choice, but then because you're hearing the right-wing pundits say things like pro-abortion all the time,
mm-hmm,
like, you then are hearing, like, you're hearing it so much that people who are actually pro-choice, and they're not like saying everyone should get an abortion, like, this is how right-wing spin on it is, like, everyone should get an abortion, you think everyone should just do it all the time, and I'm like, if they want to, but, like, that's not what I want. That's not what I think should happen. But then people on the left are seeing this on the media, like, berated by it, that they are starting to say, like, I'm pro-abortion.
And yeah, I'm like, and it's not really what they mean.
You need to, like, think about the language you're using a little bit more.
carefully. You're falling into that trap when you say that.
Exactly. You're setting them up for like a home run in some ways.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, yeah.
Animal carcasses.
Yeah. So a lot of medical advancement, kind of like how we do now, is made on animal carcasses or like animals, finding out anatomy. Pigs were quite a common one because they have quite a lot of stuff in common with us anatomy wise. So like the placements of organs and stuff. So you could get like a semi picture, but obviously no two animals are the same.
Yeah.
So you couldn't really entirely say, oh, this will work on a human, because it's very hard to place it, especially because the sizes are different and you have to be very good at like, I suppose it's probably here. But yeah, so students would use animal carcasses to practice on. They were also allowed the corpses of felons, because obviously, because felons, they're not getting into heaven anyway, so we can use them, that's fine. But these were also in short supply.
Yeah, because I know everybody was getting hung.
Yeah, like a lot of people were left to wither,
yeah,
and die or be tortured for longer, because apparently that is dignified practice and that you'll still get into heaven if you're doing that to someone, but hey ho. And because of this short supply of the felons, they were often cut into separate sections to allow, like, there's no dignity in this, like there's no dignity awarded to the dead person. Like, this is so barbaric. They were cut into sections so that multiple students could use the body. There was no respect paid to it.
Larger surface area, isn't it? Like, you're not even thinking in them as a human at that point.
And obviously this was a far from perfect way to learn, but it's all people had for a very, very alarmingly long amount of time. However, in Edinburgh, things opened up a bit in 1694. Surgeons were also allowed to use the bodies of abandoned children who died betwixt the time they were weaned and they're being put to schools and trades. So, like, they weren't a full adult because they weren't allowed to be sent to, like, workshops yet.
Yeah.
But they were also born. They were alive.
Yeah.
And they were separate from their mother. Like, they weren't rearing.
Yeah, anymore. So it's like children that have died before going to the poorhouse, but still in an orphanage, yeah. So they're under the care of the state. Care, in quotations. It'll be like it's any orphan that has died.
Yeah.
So it could just be like Faye dying in the cold, in the bad conditions in orphanages, or polio or tuberculosis, anything like that in this period. They're not killing them, but the conditions that they were living in did not make it easy to live.
And also there was a lot of like back alley trades of like dead orphans going on,
yeah,
because of this rule. And they were also in Aberdeen a few years later, they also allowed surgeons to use the bodies of people who had died friendless and in the poor house.
I wonder, like, these people who died in these poor houses or these orphan children who died before being given over to science, do you think that they were given funeral rites?
Oh.
Food for thought.
Yeah.
I certainly don't. Yeah. Maybe the children, but for especially in
the felons, definitely not.
The felons, definitely not. I mean, they would have got like a rite, like the Lord's Prayer as they were hung, usually. That would be about it. But for these orphans, I really hope, but
you would hope that at least the people that were like learning from them, like, said a little thanks or something.
I mean, it goes down a dark and twisted route very fast, the trade bodies, so I very much doubt the medical students were feeling particularly bad about it, as we'll go on to see.
Lovely stuff. However, the number of medical students grew, and so too then did the demand for cadavers. Finally, students took matters into their own hands and adopted more covert, more sinister ways of obtaining study tools. Some students did their own dirty work, creeping into graveyards and such and digging up the dead bodies, which is wild. Like, I cannot imagine, like, people back in the day were like insane. Like, I could not imagine having the stomach.
Like, they would be looking for like fresh graves, and they would be looking in the papers to see like who died.
Like, reading the obituary page like a vulture is insane. The more wild part, like, it gets worse. The deceased's clothes were often left behind in the grave, because although lifting the body was frowned upon, but there was no like legislation in place fully outlawing it, the removal of clothes from the site would be considered theft. There was more respect paid to the clothes and the belongings of the bodies than the bodies themselves, which is batshit insane.
We live in a material society.
Madonna was right. Some would do it themselves, but others were more reluctant to getting their hands dirty or maybe didn't have the stomach for it, as I said, but were still desperate to, like, learn, I guess. They thought science was fun. They wanted to learn. So they would form unholy alliances and allow other people to do the dirty work for them. This is where the trade of body snatching began.
Resurrectionists, as they were known. That's such a cool name. The Four Humours, yeah. And the Resurrectionists. That's two band names that you've got.
I was literally making I should open up a comedy club called The Four Humours.
That's such a good idea. Maybe our podcast network will be called The Four Humours.
Like a bar with a small stage that has an open mic night called The Four Humours.
Some bar owner in Edinburgh is going to steal that fucking idea.
Ugh, ugh.
We've said it, so it's copyrighted.
Yeah, that's... What's it called? Intellectual property?
Yeah, it is, because we're literally speaking it into existence and it's recorded and it will be published.
Oh my god, it's legally binding. I love that you did a legal course for a while.
So, the trade of body snatching has begun, and not only these new entrepreneurs restricted themselves to stealing the bodies of the dead. Enter the summer 1751 in Edinburgh. A needlewoman called Helen Torrance first offered a cadaver to a surgeon. She was turned down by the medical student because he didn't trust her because she wasn't a known supplier. She just hit the streets, saw a medical student and went,
"Anyone want a body?" That's wild.
The student later regrets this decision. A cadaver is a cadaver after all, and beggars can't be choosers. And a couple of months later, he finds Helen and offers to treat some sores on her leg in return for a body to be used for dissection. She agreed, promising to have one the next day, as her neighbour Jean Waldy was performing a vigil over a dead child that night, and they would bribe the mum into letting them take the corpse.
What?
It sounded really legit, and the student agreed. There was only one issue. The child wasn't actually dead yet. 8-year-old John Dallas was definitely sick. He had suffered from a glandular condition for 4 years that had left him deaf, speechless, and so weak that he was unable to leave the house. But he was improving. His hearing was gradually returning and he was learning to communicate through sign language. His father wasn't interested and he left the care of the boy and the rest of the family to their alcoholic mother, Janet Johnston. So we've got three players here. We've got Helen Torrance, Jean Waldy, and Janet Johnston. Janet Johnston is the mummy John Dallas. With John still alive, Helen realised that she had maybe jumped the gun a bit in promising a corpse the following day. And when she didn't turn up with the agreed cadaver, two medical students for the university banged on her door in Farley's Close and demanded payment. She lied and told them that the grieving mother had refused to part with her son's body so quickly and promised them another soon. The next day, she recruited her neighbour, Jean Waldy, to tell the students that they had possession of a body which was being stored in her home, but she was under suspicion and needed some cash to leave the city until the heat died down. And the students agree and give her money and went to see Helen again. And she assured them that there was a body, but oops, she couldn't get into Jean's house to collect it. Obviously, there was nobody, and by this time, the women had, like, talked themselves into a corner, and they were well aware of this. They needed to find a body, and it preferably had to be a young one. And this is when Helen has her light bulb moment about wee, sickly John Dallas. She comes up with this plan where she should take John Faye's home and carry him to Farley's Close, and given his condition, he would be dead before the journey's end.
This is like Wild West. What year was this?
1751.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a long time ago.
I know. And because she's already roped Jean into this, she's had Jean lie for her. And they've gave money to Jean. Jean's implicated. So the two women plot to keep the boy's mother, Janet Johnston, occupied whilst Jean nips out and kidnaps the child. Janet had asked Helen to make a shirt for her youngest son, and when she came to collect it, she was offered a drink. Just to be sociable, and because she was an alcoholic, obviously, she accepted the drink, and another, and another, and another. Jean, meanwhile, had faked being sick and had retired to her room upstairs, so Helen, good friend that she was, felt the need to check on her every now and again, leaving Janet alone with the bottle. Intentionally gone upstairs to make sure that Janet would... She's an alcoholic, she has an addiction, and she can't help herself, so she becomes really inebriated really fast.
So you're, like, manipulating this woman's disease to steal her child, to sell, her child's bottle. That's wild.
This is a sad story. So Helen goes upstairs and tells Jean the good news that Janet has, like, she's basically blackout drunk. So Jean sneaks out. The coast is clear and she goes to the tenement that the Dallas is, and she lured John Dallas from his bed and into the night. As Helen predicted, by the time that he reached Farley's Close, the wee weak boy was dead. The women had agreed a deposit of 2 shillings and 10 pence for the body, plus a further 3 shillings when they were unable to hide the corpse safely. So Helen, who's a big strong woman, wrapped it in her apron and carried it herself to the room of the physician's apprentice, Andrew Anderson. There it was stored under the bed, and she received another 6 pence for the trouble of bringing it to him. This has all gone on in the old town, so, like, the students are living up at the university, and for what I can gather, where Farley's Close and stuff is, this is kind of like they're doing at the Cowgate. So it's not that
upstairs, downstairs.
So. Aye, so they're just walking through the closes in the middle of the night and getting away with it. Nobody's
just, like, covered in a sheet or something, or, like, in a cart.
And an ape. She's got him wrapped, in the apron. Jean brings the body to Helen. Helen can't find anywhere to hide the body. She puts it in her apron and just goes, well, fuck it, I'm going to go to the medical students and get this out of the way. So she's given another 6 pence for the trouble, and all in all, it's a very profitable night's work. Meanwhile, the mum, Janet, had made her way home and found that her son's bed was empty. When her husband found out that she had been out drinking with her cronies whilst the son had gone missing, he was fuming and he chucked her out. Naturally, she turned to her pal Helen, and the fine Christian woman that she was took her in. It was whilst she was staying with Helen that night that heard the two arguing her money. So they're bickering about the profit that they've made off of her dead son, and she hears it. Helen lied and said that she had made an apron that hadn't been paid for by Jean's husband, but the now sober Janet was unconvinced, and she found this quite suspicious.
I mean, she sobered up quite fast, to be
fair. I mean, alcohol wasn't as potent as it is now.
That's true. Like all meads and beers and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't like she was on Smirnoff.
Right? On top of this, a neighbour had also seen Helen whilst she had John wrapped up in her apron, and she was gone to the, like, she was gone through all the tenements and the closes on the way to the medical students. And she actually stopped to have a conversation with the neighbour who seen her. So she's got something wrapped in her apron, and the neighbour is talking to her. And obviously, once John goes missing and everybody hears about it, the neighbour's like, oh, I seen Helen. Word spread through the tenements that Helen Torrance had kidnapped the Dallas boy, although no one yet knew that he was already dead and was lying under the bed of a medical student. It wasn't there for long, though, and the physician's apprentice had moved it into an empty room in the Cowgate where it was laid on a slab and prepared for dissection. By the time that the news of the abduction and Helen's alleged involvement reached the doctors and the students, they had already sliced the little boy open along the lower abdomen and were preparing for further probing. When they realised that they had been party to child murder, they hastily sewed him back up before dumping the corpse in a close off a Liberton Wynd. Torrance and Waldy were quickly arrested and blamed each other for the murder. This is similar to what happened with Burke and Hare.
Yeah. I got out of hand very fast.
Ah, yeah, they're both blaming each other, but the smarter ones believes. In this case, though, when they're blaming each other, it did them no good whatsoever, as they were both found guilty of murder and sentenced to hang. Helen attempted to escape the noose by claiming that she was pregnant, and by close examination by a team of midwives was proved to be lying. She and her accomplice were led to the gallows on the grass market on the 18th of March, 1752. On the scaffold, Jean repented for her crimes but continued to heap the blame on Helen. Not dignified. She said that she had been drunk when Helen talked her into the plan, claiming that the young Dallas boy must have been smothered under her clothes as she carried him through the streets and that she didn't intend to murder him. However, she agreed that her execution was warranted since she had been responsible. Helen, though, warned the spectators against the perils of drunkenness, bad company, and uncleanliness. The noose was then placed around their necks, and they were the first two convicted body snatchers who were executed.
And rightfully so. I mean, okay, this is obviously a very, like, gruesome story. Kind of a departure from what we normally do, because...
I think we've spoke about, like, true crimey stuff, like, once.
A bit hypocritical, because we kind of... slate true crime, but when I briefly glanced over this story, I didn't want to spoil it too much because I thought you would be doing the actual telling of the story part, so I didn't want to spoil it for myself hearing it. But my brief skim of it, I thought it was important. Like, I thought there's an important place for a story like this for a couple of reasons, because I do genuinely find true crime kind of gruesome and kind of a very sinister sort of voyeurism almost.
Yeah.
But a story like this, first of all, it's very easy to see how this sort of like this lower class of people were very desperate in a time like this. In this era, the medical student also knew this wasn't an orphan child. All the medical advancements of this time are like celebrated and stuff, and these medical students are rarely implicated in the crimes. They're rarely seen as bad guys of the story, but they knew what they were doing. They knew exactly where they were getting this stuff from.
Even though they didn't think it was going to be child murder, they were going to be buying the corpse, a young boy. Like, it's still not ethical. Family. Yeah, it's still not ethical at all.
Yeah. And they're rarely implicated. And there's a very strong sense of, like, classism that runs through stories like this, Burke and Hare, and how it's very sinister to me. And so I thought that was a very interesting thing to talk about for that reason. I also thought it was interesting in the sense of, like I said earlier, we have like the ethical dilemmas of like stem cells and like mouse models and stuff right now. And it's like, it's very, there's a lot of doom and gloom at the moment, but recently America sort of like, they passed a law that the FDA, I think, said that, testing for drugs don't need to be in animal models anymore. So we've gone from a place of people selling bodies of children in a couple hundred years, gone from a place of people selling bodies of children to like even mice don't need to be used anymore, like showing respect to even like smaller, lesser civilized vertebrate animals, which I find kind of reassuring in many ways.
Yeah, I think when you're discussing something like this, obviously we've started it off getting like what the situation was that led to people being, and like desperate these enough. Great medical achievements were built on the back of like things more sinister because stuff was so limited. And it's an like this, for as gruesome as it is, it's like an important look into what life was like in Edinburgh in the 1600s to like at least the 1800s, late 1800s.
Yeah.
So it's not really like this like perverse voyeuristic look into like the murder of a child. It's like,
yeah, it's like, it's not JonBenet Ramsey.
No. Like, there's no theories here. Like, poor people were desperate. Medical students were desperate. And this horrible thing happened. And it probably would have been avoided if the church were not so
strict. Yeah. If we didn't believe in like four liquids governing all illnesses. Leeches were kind of like, they kind of worked sometimes though. I'll give them that.
Yeah, bloodletting and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's historical murders. I do like, obviously, like the discourse on true crime. I mind when we first started this podcast and folk were sending in stories and somebody wanted us to talk about like quite a recent murder, like 2010. And I was like, oh, it's like not that kind of show. But
yeah,
I think when it comes to like historical murders, obviously like there's less, well, there's no more people affected with the crime who can become upset, which was my main concern about talking about modern true crime. And also
yeah,
there's a lot more to learn
Like, I'll talk about modern sightings of fairies and shit.
Yeah, but I'm not about to talk about, like, a woman who was brutally murdered by her husband in Scotland. Like, yeah. We do need to get into the nitty-gritty that...
I personally am not a person who will listen to things like that or enjoys it. I can understand in some instances people's
I used to listen to true crime, like, quite a lot. Like, murder and gory stories has been a fascination of mine since I was a child. I think I was given, like, a book of, like, serial killers that, like, was given to me, like, in a box of books for a charity shop, and it just became this kind of obsession. But I think during the pandemic, because things were already quite, like, dull and hopeless, like, I was like, I don't want to listen to this anymore. And I can understand why people wouldn't want to listen to this episode in particular, but there is a lot to learn about resurrectionists in Edinburgh specifically. That's been the Creepy Wee Podcast. If you want to follow us on social media, you can follow us on Instagram at the Creepy Wee Podcast. TikTok is the same. Twitter is the Creepy Wee Pod. If you want to send us more embarrassing stories, you can do it there, or you can send us them by email to thecreepyweepodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to buy a t-shirt, you don't have to though. You can get them on thecreepyweepodcast.co.uk. But the best way to support us would be to leave a 5-star review wherever you listen. Thanks. Bye.
What are you waiting for? You have to return to the classic sometimes.
Right, let's stop.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.